highlighting the topics that affect agriculture nationwide. It's the AgNet Weekly with Sabrina Halverson, brought to you by AgNet Media. And now, here's this week's featured conversation.
Joining us this week is Fran Miller. She is the Senior Staff Attorney and Professor with the Center for Agriculture and Food Systems at Vermont Law and Graduate School. And we're talking about policy recommendations to address some of the issues facing U.S. farmers, especially smaller or underserved farmers. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and this is the AgNet Weekly. We wanted to talk about the Farm Bill today. It seems to be almost common practice these days with the Farm Bill that it was delayed. From last year, it was supposed to be the 2023 Farm Bill. Now we're working on the 2024 Farm Bill. But I'm wondering, from your perspective and with your expertise, how do you see the Farm Bill progressing now? I mean, like I said, we've had many that have been delayed in the past, but what are your thoughts on it so far?
Well, the word that I have from people who deal with folks on the Hill is that it's pretty questionable whether we'll have a 2024 Farm Bill and that it could actually go into 2025 after the election. So I think nobody knows. And there's still so much work that Congress has to do around appropriations while they passed USDA appropriations and FDA appropriations and some other things. There's still some big work to be done. And it's hard to imagine that they're going to get to the Farm Bill until that is all resolved. And then there's recesses and, you know, Congress takes their breaks. And it's just not clear that it's going to happen this year. That's my intel anyway.
You know, honestly, I'm hearing the same thing as well. Many people are thinking it's going to be after the elections, because it is hard to get a major bill like the Farm Bill passed during the election cycles. So as we're looking at Farm Bill discussions continue about, you know, what's important to have in the Farm Bill, what should be funded more, what should be funded less, there's the continuing question that some have of if we should split the nutrition title away from the other agricultural titles. I would love to hear your thoughts on what would happen if that were to happen, if we were to split the nutrition title off into its own bill. I've had other opinions, but I would like to hear from your perspective.
Well, I know that the conventional wisdom is that these two pieces of policy were put together originally because it got Congress working together, rural and urban, or farm-oriented states and more urban-oriented states. Although a lot of states are both, so I'm not sure about that. I think that probably still does do that, especially given the partisanship that exists right now and all of the forces combined to create a lot of extreme positions on these things. And I think I'm of the mind that it needs to stay together in order to get done. I think maybe an example of that might be the WIC, the recent Women, Infant, and Child appropriation that did end up getting through in the appropriations process. But I'm not on the Hill. I'm sure there was a lot of wheeling and dealing to get those things through. And I think there were a couple of compromises, you know, on all sides to get that through. And it does seem like in our supercharged partisan atmosphere, it has to be together. And I think that if it wasn't, it's not clear that either one of them could get through and get redone. And that would be tragedy.
Yeah. And you mentioned it with the super partisan atmosphere that we have. Now, it could be just my perception. I could be wrong, but it feels to me like we're more separated now than we have been in the past. I know, in fact, that there have been times in our history when we have been even more separated. But there really feels like there's this big partisan divide right now. In your perspective, is that making things more difficult for getting this Farm Bill passed? We do hear, and I report on a lot of the back and forth, you know, this side wants this and that side wants that. With how divided politics are right now, is that making it more difficult?
I think that it is, Sabrina. I think the American people are much less divided than Congress is. And that's really a shame that the American people aren't getting the representation of their interests in the halls of Congress, in, you know, amongst the powers that be. I do think there's a lot of forces that create that partisan divide. But it does feel to me as well that it's crazy right now. And anybody who allows or supports a policy that is deemed to be the other side's policy gets pummeled by their side. And that's terrible for American democracy. And it's not representative of the American people. I really, truly feel that people are so much less divided. And I'm not sure what we do about that.
I really tend to agree with you on that. So when we're talking about just the people in general as a whole, yeah, it seems like we are less divided than how we're represented currently.
Yeah. And just one thing to add to that, I think that shows up in agriculture. I think that, you know, people talk about farmers as if it's monolithic, and obviously it's not. There are different kinds of farmers. There are large farmers and small farmers. There are a diversity. I mean, honestly, there should be more diversity amongst farmers, but we'll leave that one aside for the moment. I don't think farmers with each other are as divided as leadership, as congressional leadership. I think that the larger farmers likely want small farmers to have more access to USDA, more access to land, et cetera. I don't think any farmer doesn't want another farmer to make a living and be viable. It supports them all. And I think that's just true across the board.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that are in the Farm Bill. And I know a couple of things that, from what I understand, are really top of your interest too, and a new focus on some sustainability, some climate mitigation issues. What are some things that we should be looking at in the Farm Bill?
So the work that I do tends to be supportive to smaller farmers and more sustainable farmers, farmers who are really focused on ecologically good practices, and younger farmers and beginning farmers. And so there's a few different marker bills have been introduced that we at CAFS have contributed to in some way. We don't advocate, but we do provide a lot of legal and policy support to those that do. So one of our partners is the National Family Farm Coalition, and we've done a variety of policy work for them. And one of the bills that they are pressing for and that we worked on is called the Farmland for Farmers Act. Corporate consolidation is a big issue in farmland, right? And Congress, I think in a probably a nonpartisan or bipartisan way, actually, have been focusing on some of the foreign investors in farmland. But in my opinion, that really ignores the bigger issue in America, which is corporate consolidation, domestic corporations, and ways that land is being treated as a commodity, as an investment vehicle. And there's lots of examples of that if you look at some of the ads that are coming out from some of these multinationals, multi-layered subsidiaries, as they're called, which are really just buying land for investment purposes. And it's decimating to rural communities. It's not a good thing. And it prevents younger farmers and farmers with less capital to purchase land. It takes people out of rural communities, sends them off in other places. And so this is one of the bills. It restricts corporations and multi-layered subsidiaries, pension funds, investment funds from purchasing and leasing land and getting USDA subsidies, most importantly, because that's one of the ways that, you know, they're really supported in owning of the land. There's exceptions, plenty of exceptions for people who are really doing the farming, but it does get at this issue of corporate investment. That's one of the bills.
Explain the difference, or let's talk about the difference between a large corporation that is getting into farming versus a large farm or a large family farm. Is there a difference as far as you're concerned in the two?
I think that what this bill tries to prevent is the large corporation that's really just using it as an investment vehicle. I think the large family farmer is making a living and doing it in the way that they can and they know how and historically have. I might challenge the need for thousands and thousands of acres and some of the ways that those commodities get sold, but we're not going down that road right now. I do believe that a large corporation or large investment funds that is investing in land and then leasing it to a local farmer at the highest price possible is terrible incentive. It doesn't incentivize the farmer to use good practices that cost more money. It doesn't incentivize the farmer to spend more money locally. The farmer doesn't own the land, and so it doesn't incentivize them to build soil health. It's bad practice, in my opinion. And it's really also, there's been studies that have been done that show that farmland prices are increasing tremendously. And I think that it's keeping the younger generation off the land when the average age of farmers is growing. I think the latest was all the census of ag, I think it was close to 60. We need that younger generation to be feeding us. That's my thoughts on that.
You kind of hinted at it, but I was going to ask, what does that do to the availability of farmland and the accessibility, I guess, of farmland for younger farmers or new farmers or underserved farmers? Are we losing some of these who could be the next rising generation of farmers?
I think we are, Sabrina. The National Young Farmers Coalition, for a number of years in a row, has surveyed young farmers across America. And the number one challenge that young farmers face is land access. And it can only hurt them that land prices, let's see, the number of institutionally owned properties rose threefold from 2009 to 2022. And the market value of that property increased from less than $2 billion to over $14 billion in the same time period. So it's really preventing young farmers from accessing land. It's also preventing existing farmers from expanding their operations. So they're successful, they're making a living, they're selling product, they want to expand. A big corporate investor comes in and can bid so much higher than they can on that land. And it's really unjust, really unfair.
How do we fight this? What is the proper path to take to turn this around?
Well, the Farm Bill is supposed to be a path. Whether it is or not remains to be seen. But this bill does exist. I know the National Family Farm Coalition is working hard to get co-sponsors on the bill and make sure that some of the language at least makes it into the Farm Bill. One of the ways that these kinds of laws have been challenged is on the state level. Large corporate interests like Smithfield, also Chinese, foreign, have really chipped away at state laws that are anti-corporate farming laws in the Midwest, especially. And this bill would make it so that every state in the country has to enforce at least as restrictive a law as the Farmland for Farmers Act is. And so it would take away the ability of these large, mostly domestic. I don't want to pick out Smithfield for being Chinese. It really is mostly US multinational corporations that are doing this, and it would prevent them from doing that.
So I think as our time is kind of wrapping up here, I think I would ask, like, what are the key takeaways that you really want our listeners to grasp?
I would love for people to differentiate between large commodity farmers, which need support for what they do, and smaller farmers who have much different needs. And the USDA has done pretty well by larger commodity farmers and has not done well for small farmers. And the small farmers, especially the diversified farms, the vegetable crops, as they call them, specialty crops, which is kind of crazy, the livestock growers who feed their communities, we need them. And you could see that in COVID when the grocery stores didn't have product, but people were going to their local farmers markets and their local farmers to literally get fed. And I can't imagine that's the only time that's going to happen to us, that things are going to shut down in that way. I think local and regional food systems are so critical, and we have to start working on these systems to support those farmers.
Thank you again to Fran Miller, the staff attorney and professor with the Center for Agriculture and Food Systems at Vermont Law and Graduate School. If you want to hear more discussions like this, make sure you tap that follow button. I'm Sabrina Halverson for the AgNet Weekly.
Continue the conversation online by following Sabrina Halverson on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. And get more agricultural news at southeastagnet.com and agnetwest.com. This has been the AgNet Weekly from AgNet Media. Thank you for tuning in.